Happy 4th of July, WGN listeners. This is Elise Klink sitting in for Steve Bertrand. It is the first of a whole week of fill-ins. So happy to be here. Happy to celebrate the 4th of July with you. So, special thing today, we've got Will Flanagan here. He's the GM of Chicago Inno. We'll talk to him in just a moment. But I'm hoping that if you have been saving up your money questions, that you are going to call in, because we're going to give you a chance to ask me anything related to money today. It's an AMA here on WGN Radio. You can even call now, get in line, 312-981-7200. You can tweet me questions at Glink. You can follow me on Instagram, although I'm a little slower there. But just put up a cool photo from yesterday. Facebook and Twitter, happy to take all of your money questions and engage with you online today. The rest of this week, it's going to be packed all kinds of great business news and information. A lot of fallout from Brexit. Oh, my goodness. You know, and we thought we were in trouble with politics. But no, we look great. Thank you very much, Brexit. 312-981-7200 for your best money moves. We'll do that at the bottom of the hour. All right, Will Flanagan, GM, Chicago Inno, welcome to WGN Radio. Happy 4th of July.
Happy 4th. Thanks so much for having us.
Do you have your red, white, and blue on?
I got it on.
I see some turquoise and black, but all right, you know, overall.
Under the shirt.
Under the shirt. Okay, we're going to do that in the second part of the hour. All right, let's chat. You sent a whole bunch of really interesting stuff going on. Why don't we talk just a little bit. Start out with the biggest tech story that I saw last week, Avant, locally,
local
tech
story,
and then we'll move into what's going on with Tesla. But Avant, a company that I've been watching that's doing lending to people, they're cutting back. They're a victim of what is going on, frankly, with Brexit. It caused the whole markets around the world to be in a stir. Tell me what you see.
Yeah, absolutely. So Avant is the fast-growing consumer lending startup. And fast-growing is probably an understatement. They're one of the fastest-growing companies in Chicago tech history.
Are they faster than SoFi, for example? So SoFi got out in San Francisco, got $1 billion from SoftBank, which I thought was insane.
They're on par.
It's
that same thing. Launched in 2012, they have 750, 800 employees, raised over $1 billion, value at $2 billion.
Wow.
And this is a marketplace for consumer lending. And the category was hot, which is why you had all of these companies valued so quickly and raising a lot of money. And then market volatility, the rise of loan delinquencies increased, the lending club scandal happened, where the top of the pyramid, as far as the category is considered, you know, there was a lot of shakeup happening. People got really nervous.
Lending Club was, just to sort of interject, was kind of the first of that person-to-person lending that kind of came in. And I remember when it came in and I thought, wow, this is really sort of interesting. They're trying to go around the banks, develop another way to lend money to create opportunity for people that, you know, that's how it was positioned anyway. SoFi came out. They were more positioning as refinance your student debt. Everybody kind of had a little toehold in different places.
Yeah, in Avant's toehold was its predictive analytics software, where we're using tech to make sure that these loans are as efficient and smart as possible. So
that predictive analytics going thing?
I know. Well, the predictive analytics, you know, they're looking at everything that they see that happened before, but you can't, I guess, predict what comes after. So when the shakeup,
my goodness!
Know,
so 2008 all over again. Like, wow, you would think that, you know, they learned from the big banks.
So not only have they had to pump the brakes, they've had to come to a stop. So they have decreased their originations and loans by half. So they've gone from 200 million to 100 million. And they have said that they're going to have to reduce staff in line with what they cut back.
What's their average loan amount that they're doing? Are they doing 1,000 to 5,000? Are they doing 50 to 100,000? Where do they fall in? Do you know?
It's right around that 3,500 to 35,000. It's that lower range.
Okay, so when they're talking about a million in loans, it's a significant number of loans, or $100 million in loans. It's significant.
Yeah, in the 4 years they've been operating, they've issued over $3 billion in loans. So they're not just showing a lot of promise, which that's kind of the criticism that a lot of tech startups that get valued so quickly is that it's, you know, it's all on promise. Look at our user growth. But Avant was really delivering. They were issuing a lot of loans. And the demand hasn't decreased. And that's why the CEO of Avon, Al Goldstein, is bullish that they can ride this out, is that it's not like the product is has ceased to work or they saw something where, oh, man, our tech was wrong. It's that the markets, you know, all of a sudden the category
So here's the real problem, as I see it, as somebody who watches money and marketplace mm-hmm. all the time. You know, demand is one thing, but ability to repay is another. And yeah. so what happened after 2008 is all the big banks suddenly started doing mortgages, and they all had to fall under a new rule called ability to repay.
Yeah.
So you can say predictive analytics all you want, but which is a fancy word, and I use it all the time, too,
yeah.
and it's cool. Boy, people think if you can use those words in sort of the right way, you must know what you're talking about. But the truth is that I don't think anybody out there has developed a predictive analytic that can or an algorithm that can predict what will happen with somebody with a great credit rating or great credit score suddenly loses their job and their ability to repay goes away. Nobody's done that.
I mean, but that's what the tech was out to do, and it was doing. So the tech didn't fail in the predictive analytics on people not being able to pay their loans. It failed on being able to predict the volatility surrounding the entire market. So, and that's also a failure on predictive analytics, right? It's not like this is the first time something like this has happened. You mentioned 2008. Shouldn't that be factored into the algorithm? Shouldn't that be factored into the tech to account for things that has happened in the past? But as far as the measuring the peer-to-peer consumer loans, the tech, the fact that it had originated those loans, it was raising all of this money, it was getting the banks behind it,
mm-hmm.
it seemed that the technology on Avant's side, which is why they're bullish on being able to ride this out, was working. But can they kind of tread water while everything works itself out? And a lot
we'll
of people
see.
Say no. Yeah.
We'll see. Everybody else is doing the exact same thing
yep.
in this kind of startup lending space. They're all cutting back on people. They're cutting down their loan volumes. They're reducing their outlook. And we'll see if they make it to the next cycle. What will be the real key is, of course, how do they deal with a big recession? And
yeah.
there are lots of people who think we're heading in that direction. We'll have to see what happens. All right. I want to switch gears to something super fun.
Yeah.
Is it the Noonie Toaster?
The Noonie Toaster.
The Noonie Toaster. Bringing tech to tortillas. Okay. So I'm married to a man who was born in Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
And our kids speak Spanish, and we eat a lot of tortillas. So I was so excited about this because I have burned more than one finger on more
yeah.
than one occasion doing my tortillas either over the open grate or on a tortilla pan because, of course, it's too much work to get the tongs. So you reach in with your fingers, and it's like, ah, what was I thinking? Tell us about this product.
Yeah, I mean, this is why we love talking about tech, because we can go from talking about market volatility and consumer lending to a toaster that cooks tortillas real fast. That's kind of the space you deal in. So with the Noonie Toaster, basically it's the perfect kind of crowdfunding story. It's on Kickstarter, and what it does is it solves a problem. It makes it easier to cook tortillas. Picture a toaster, but it flips on its size that is made specifically for tortillas.
Well, I love that it can do six at a time.
Six at a time.
And it's kind of, now if you could just fold them over and make quesadillas, that would be even better. But meanwhile, it reminds me a little bit of the George Foreman grill press,
exactly.
right? Where it kind of comes down and you're like, okay, well, so do you have any idea how fast the tortilla cooks?
I don't, they have a number of settings, so it's going to vary based on that setting. But what's mm-hmm. interesting is we spoke to the team behind this, and their tech, you know, it's funny. It's tech for tortillas. It's kind of a silly, fun thing to talk about, but there's a ton of opportunity here. They're telling us that a tortilla market, believe it or not, is over $12 billion. So they're,
yeah. and
they're,
you know how inexpensive it is to buy a package of tortillas? 49 cents.
Exactly.
Jewel. So, you know, that's a big market.
But exactly what you're saying. You know, this is a problem that people have. It's not a big problem, but, you know, everyone has missed a flip on a tortilla. So what they're doing is just saying, all right, this is a problem. It's not going to change everyone's life, but let's fix it. You know, sell it for $69. And to me, that's technology. And it's also the fact that, you know, it's a crowdfunding product. It is a great kind of story of how easy it is to launch something these days. It's, I have something, I can build it, let's get it out there, you know, judge the market's interest by how much I can raise, then use that money, that crowdfunding to really take off.
So the downsides to it that I see are the $69
mm-hmm.
although they said that they think it's actually going to be $99.
Yeah.
So it's $99, $69 maybe to start. And then, you know, that's a big amount of money for people who are spending 49 cents for a package of 20 tortillas. So I think that's a little bit, that'll be an interesting hurdle for them to overcome. And then I think the last thing is, I think a lot of people just have a lot of stuff on their counters.
Yeah.
This is one more thing to have on your countertop.
No, you're exactly right. And it's that you're seeing across, all of, from devices to apps. I mean, the big story last week is that people have stopped downloading apps. And I think it's because it's so easy to create and to build. Maybe there's too much stuff, and now not only are our counters full, our phones are full, our pockets are full. Like
my phone is so full, it's just slow. And it's heavier to carry around now
because
it's
there's
so full of stuff.
There's a device, there's a service for everything, which makes that everything more convenient and efficient.
Right.
But I don't need 1,000 things for the 1,000 tasks. I kind of maybe just need 100 or 10 or even one would be great.
Yeah, one would be great. They're working on that app. There's an app for that. All right, Will Flanagan is the GM of Chicago Inno. We're talking about tech and we're talking about cool stuff. And there's this really cool thing. If you are a red meat eater, and I totally am, we're going to talk about this one coming back. So stay tuned. I'm Elise Glink, filling in for Steve Bertrand this week on WGN. We are now back officially with Will Flanagan here on WGN Radio, 4th of July. I'm Elise Glink, sitting in for Steve Bertrand. So let's talk Tesla.
Let's talk it.
So I have a friend who just ordered a car, won't be ready till September. Tesla.
Oh, wow, really?
Yep, he's so super excited. It's a blue. He said it's a gorgeous blue color, and I think that's pretty neat.
Yeah.
Tesla had a big week this week.
It had a big week. So the Tesla Model S, which is, you know, their most popular model, they are the leaders in the autonomous driving movement. They have cars on the road that can be, the self-driving mode can be activated, and it works. I mean, there are clips that go viral. It feels like every other week of people asleep at the wheel and their car just driving through traffic. And the reason it was a big week for Tesla and really the autonomous driving movement is that the first known fatality occurred while a car was in self-driving mode.
So the guy who did this, I'm trying to think of his name, Brown? Was that his last name?
I believe that was his last name, yes.
So he is a tech guy, he's an engineer, and he loved his car. He thought his Tesla car could do anything. In my understanding, and I watched a couple of his videos, is he would videotape everything to show how you can do almost anything besides drive your Tesla, and it would drive you for it. And I think when he was in that accident, wasn't he like reading Harry Potter or something?
There has been reports, the investigation is still undergoing, that you know, Tesla is very clear that we are still beta testing this feature. Please keep your hands on the wheel. As all of these videos that have surfaced online about people kind of using this, that's not the case. The reason they turn on autopilot is that they can read a book or tune out or talk to their passenger or take a nap, which again, Tesla says, we're not there yet. Please stay focused. But the reason this crash happened is a brightly lit sky hit the white side of a tractor trailer and the driver and autopilot didn't see it. Something that, you know, an accident that happens to everybody. But again, you know, you don't really dive into the story. You just see the headline. A fatality happens while autopilot was on and while everyone's trying to figure out, you know, should I be excited about driverless cars? Should I be scared about driverless cars? It's a bad headline. And it's a bad headline this week and this month is because the Federal Traffic Agency was set to debut new rules and regulations for driverless cars within the next couple weeks. So this just came at the worst time.
It is a bad time, but I think overall we're making inexorable progress on driverless cars. And as I look at my own kids who are 18 and 21, one of them likes to drive, one of them doesn't, and I can see that the future is going to be none of us driving. It's going to be the age of Jetson, right, where we're going to get into our driverless, soon-to-be hovermobiles, and it's going to take us wherever we want to go. And the only thing better than that would be Star Trek. So
exactly.
You know, bringing the future to the present, I think, is really what Tesla is trying to do on a number of fronts. I don't see this stopping progress, do you?
No, I don't think so either. And to be clear, it is working. This is a tragedy. It's, you know, maybe...
I don't mean to make... There's no lighting
100%,
here. You know, this is a man who had a family and a parents and and whatever. You know, for them, this is a huge tragedy.
Exactly.
I don't think it'll be the last.
No, I don't think so either. But this is the first fatality in nearly 130 miles of autopilot use. Now, to give that some context, the average, just across all U.S. vehicles... they have a fatality every 94 million miles. So the Federal Traffic Agency has said, you know, like, we just don't want driverless cars to be safe. We need them to be two times as safe as regular drivers, because we're not going to say okay unless we can promise you're not just a little safer than us, you're two times, because you can't trust human drivers. So judging by those numbers, while impressive, the 130 to the 94, we're close, but we're not twice as safe yet.
Right.
But I still think 130 miles without a fatality, that's, the tech is working. It's just not perfect.
Well, we'll wait until it is. I know I will be not the first person to buy this car. So, all right, let's finish up. It's 4th of July. Everybody's getting ready to put all their stuff on the grill. I know that we're having lamb chops later on today, which is not quite what I would have thought, but we're going to some friends' houses, and they know I love lamb, so that's what we're having. But you've got some information on a cool new product called Beef Box, which is a dry-aged steak device created by Geoman.
Mm-hmm.
Is that right? And so tell us a little bit about that. We just have a minute or two left, but if you love steak, I'm thinking this has got to be your product.
Yeah, and this is so similar to the Noonie Toaster, right? Entrepreneurial-minded people have a problem, whether it's big or small, whether it's having difficulty heating tortillas, or I like dry-aged steak and I don't like spending a ton of money on it.
Oh, like $90 for a 14-ounce steak?
Exactly.
Really? You don't like that?
So it's an 18 by 14-inch container that controls humidity, regulates temperature, and fits in your fridge. So you buy a big piece of steak, you put it in your fridge, and 3 weeks later, you now have this beautiful dry aged steak. And the idea is it's affordable, it's easy, think ahead, and you are going to have beautiful cuts of meats, you know, right from your own kitchen.
So just for the food lovers out there, you know, what does dry aging do? It reduces the moisture in the steak, and this is supposed to make it
a little more tender,
tender, juicy. It's not for everybody. You can go, I think, a little too far with your dry aging, but it's supposed to be, what it does is it makes the meat more valuable. So
exactly.
If you would have a piece of meat that you'd buy, let's say in your local store or at Costco, if you dry age it, it might really be the value of that you would spend would be twice as much.
Exactly.
For a piece of meat that's dry aged, and people think that this is, you know, the latest, greatest thing. I'd sure rather dry age it myself for an $8 pound value than pay for that in a restaurant.
Yeah, what they're saying, they'll take a cut of meat that's, say, 10 per pound, and over the course of the month, they'll bring it up to about 20 a pound.
So have you tried it yet?
I haven't tried it yet.
You trying it today?
Because
then you won't be eating for like another like 2 weeks. But all right, Will Flanagan with Chicago Inno. Thanks so much for joining us on this 4th of July. Really appreciate it. How can we find out more?
Check us out at Chicago Inno and check out our daily newsletter, The Beats.
Ooh, that sounds pretty awesome. Welcome back, everybody. This is Elise Glink. It is 12:35 on WGN Radio. I'm sitting in for Steve Bertrand this week. He was in Prague. I'm not quite sure where he is now, or maybe he was heading to Prague. Oh, the life of a radio talk show host.
I saw some of the pictures from Prague. They're pretty impressive. I was there last year. I remember that. And the beer is cheap, let me tell you that.
Oh,
very, very cheap. I'm sure he's enjoying that.
Yeah, better than water. Well, given where the money is right now, at the dollar, the strength of the dollar compared to almost everything in euros, yeah, I would say you got that right. All right, I'm Elise Glink. As I said, 312-981-7200. Line up your calls now. We're going to do an Ask Me Anything. And in the meantime, I wanted to give you some of my very best money tips, my best money moves. As you know, if you listen to me when I talk with Steve on WGN Radio, I am launching a new company, and it's called Best Money Moves. It's going live in about, 2 weeks, maybe a little bit longer. So we're getting all very excited. And what this company does is it provides an employee benefit. So employers buy it, they give it to their employees to help make smarter moves, best money moves. And So excited about it. So one of my favorite best money moves is for everybody right now to take advantage of super low mortgage interest rates. So one of the things that Brexit has done, and you heard a little bit about this with Will Flanagan last half hour of the show, one of the things that's happened is that the bond markets have gone a little bit nuts and mortgage interest rates have fallen. And so this is a real opportunity for those of you who haven't refinanced your mortgages yet. And honestly, I can't even believe there are people out there who haven't done this. But there are people who are still sitting with 5, 6, and 7% interest rates. After everything we've gone through, 2008, 9, 10, 11, 12, we have had such incredibly low interest rates for the last 8 years. I can't even believe it. And we are now once again near historic lows. So if you haven't refinanced in the last 2, 3, or 4 years, if you are sitting with a mortgage or a home equity line of credit that has anything over 5%, this is your opportunity to make a best money move and refinance your mortgage. And I've got 4 rules. Because it's baseball season, right? 4 rules for a home run refinance. And I want to give those to you now because I think that this is one of those things that we sort of don't know when to pull the trigger. And I've met so many people and they say, Elise, when do I pull the trigger? And I say now, because you can always do it again later. So if you haven't pulled the trigger, the very first thing you have to look at is the interest rate lower than where you are now? Is it? Because if you don't know where you are, you can't figure out where you're going to. And there used to be this rule of thumb where if you were 2 percentage points below where you are on your mortgage, then no brainer, go refinance your loan. But that isn't so good anymore, right? Because now with super low rates, fees, points, and other things that go into it, you might be able to do it if the interest rate is just a point below where you are. So let's say you're at 4.75% on a 30-year fixed rate mortgage. You may be able to get under 4%, and that may work for you. So now we'll move to rule number 2. So number 1 is, can you lower the interest rate? The second one, and this is a biggie, can you shorten the term of the loan? This is where you are going to get the biggest bang for your buck. Can you shorten the term of the loan? So if you're at a 30-year loan, and let's say you're 5 years in, you got 25 years left, can you go from a 25-year term to a 15-year term? You are going to reap tens of thousands of dollars of savings if you can just shorten that term. What if you paid 10 years of this loan? Can you shorten that to 15 years? Great. What if you're at a 15-year loan? Can you go down to 10 years? If you can, you might even be able to get under 3% right now on a refinance. 10 years and you'll pay it all off. There are so many different opportunities. So number 1, can you lower the interest rate? Number 2, can you shorten the loan term? Number 3, you got to ask yourself, hey there, what's it going to do to my payment? What's it going to do to my payment? Can I lower the payment? Now, this is interesting because lowering the payment doesn't necessarily mean that you are going to be in better shape. Right? If you're lowering the term and you're going from, say, 25 years to 15 years, right, you may be paying the exact same amount or slightly less on your payment, but you've now shortened the term. So there's a lot to consider. And the 4th thing is, can you do it with very little out of pocket in terms of points and fees? If you can do that, right, so can you lower the interest rate? Can you shorten the loan term? Can you lower your individual monthly payment? And watch your loan fees. That's how you get a home run refinance. Now, what if you can only do 2 of those 4 things? Can you get a double? Does it make sense? Yes, it absolutely can make sense to do that. When you're going out there, you have to just look at what the big picture is. And this is why it doesn't matter if you can only do a home run refinance, right? Sometimes if you can just get a double, a solid double or a triple, you're going to be in great shape. So those are my rules for a home run refinance. More than happy to take your questions about your money today. AMA 312-981-7200 here on WGN Radio. Sally joins me on the line. Hey, Sally. Welcome to WGN.
Yes. My question is this. In 08, I took a home equity loan, and I'm told that even though the rate was over 8%. I cannot do anything to change that because it was with a community bank and the federal government changed the laws. Therefore, I'm not eligible to refinance because I deferred my property taxes until I either sell my home or pass on.
Did you get, so Sally, did you get a making home affordable refinance? Is that what the issue is?
No, I just got a regular loan from my community bank.
And are you underwater with that loan?
No.
So you've got equity in the property, right?
No.
Okay,
no.
And that loan should be refinanceable. What's going on with your credit history and credit score?
It's fine.
What do you think it's at, your FICO score?
750 or better.
Okay, and you've got an 8% mortgage?
Mm-hmm. Home equity loan.
A home equity loan. And then do you also have a primary loan?
No, just credit card.
Just credit. Okay. So tell me a little bit about how much do you think your house is worth right now?
The market has changed in this area, but it's probably worth 75 or better.
All right, 75,000. And how much is, what is the total amount of loans that you have against the home, mortgage and home equity loan?
I only owe the home equity loan. I owned the house before that, so I only owe them about $12,000.
Okay, so here's the problem that I see, but I think you can fix this. The problem is it's very hard to get a new mortgage for less than $50,000, which you clearly don't need a $50,000 mortgage when you're at a $75,000 house. But you can get a different home equity line of credit. You just have to go to a different bank. You have plenty of equity in this house, and there should be a lender, provided you have the income to cover it, and I assume you've got the income, even if it's Social Security, that there's no reason that you cannot refinance this home equity line of credit or home equity loan. Have you talked to other lenders with different banks?
No.
Oh, you got to get out there, Sally. You got to have some conversations. I absolutely guarantee that there will be somebody else interested, if your credit is good and you've got the income, to refinance your $12,000 loan. You could probably take out a $15,000 home equity line of credit, pay off this loan, and then you can pay down it to where it was, $12,000, or use whatever's left, just keep it in there and start repaying that. But a home equity line of credit should be a whole lot less than over 8% today. But you got to go shop around. Definitely got to shop around so that you know who it is you're going to talk to and get a couple of different competing bids. Do you have internet access? Can you look online?
Yes, I can. The other question is this. The bank says that because they are below the state of Illinois in terms of if something happened to me, they're no longer at the top. But that guy deferring taxes for the last 2 or 3 years, that has created a problem for them. They aren't happy that that's the case.
I don't understand a little bit of what they're talking about, but it sounds to me that if the bank is having issues, then one of the things that you would want to do is get out from under that bank and not be associated with it. It can be a little bit complicated if they were, hey, they shouldn't be paying your real estate property taxes through this loan, which is a home equity loan. That typically isn't what happens. But definitely start shopping around, talk to 4 or 5 different lenders, and I feel very, very confident that you're going to be able to find a way to get out from under an 8% mortgage. All right, it's 12:45. You can call in for your questions, 312-981-7200. I'm Elise Klink. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with more WGN Radio. Welcome back, everybody. This is WGN. I'm Elise Blink, sitting in for Steve Bertrand this week. We're doing an AMA, Ask Me Anything About Money, and I'll give you your best money move. 312-981-7200 is our number here. Karen joins me on the line. Hey, Karen. Not yet. Yes. All right, I'm punching buttons. I'm now supposed to stop punching buttons. This is always a bad thing. All right. We're not going to talk to Karen just yet, I guess. Yes? No? All right, not yet. 1248 on WGN Radio. I'm Elise Glink. So when you're, I want to just finish up one more thought about this refinancing. We had Sally was having problems refinancing with her bank. One other thought. Folks, when I talk about refinancing and getting a mortgage, right, either way, all around, you have to actually do the homework. So you have to go out, you have to talk to four or five different lenders. And not every lender is going to want your business. And here's how to know if they don't want your business. They will either give you a price that sounds completely ridiculous based on where you know things are right now, right? So if they tell you that the only thing they can do is give you an 8% loan or a home equity loan at 8, 9, 10%, that you know is wrong. And what they're telling you, without really telling you, is they don't want your business. And they may not want it for a bunch of reasons. They don't do those loans anymore. They don't know where to sell those loans. They've had bad luck with those loans. Whatever the reason is, they don't want your business. So just move on. But if you talk to four or five different lenders, look at an online lender, a big bank, if you talk to a credit union, if you look with a local mortgage broker, those are all really good ways to figure out exactly who wants your business. And what you want to do is go with someone who wants your business. 312-981-7200. Let's go back to the phones. Karen joins me on the line. Hi, Karen.
Hi there.
How can I help you today?
So we have 5 years left on an ARM at 3.3%, and all the 30 years right now are higher than that. So at first glance, it doesn't look like it makes sense to refinance for us, but I guess I wanted your opinion.
So you've got how many years? You had a five-year adjustable rate, and it's at 3.3%. Do you know how much it's supposed to increase when you get to the end of it?
I've got my husband here.
Whatever the market is at that point, I think there's limits.
Yeah, it's usually limited to 1 or 2 percentage points. So if it goes up to 1%, it turns into a one-year adjustable, which means that every year it's going to go up, right?
Yeah.
So even though mortgage interest rates are a little bit higher than that right now, they're not much. And what you should try to do, think about those four rules for the home run refinance, right? You want to see if you can you won't be able to get something lower than what you have right now, but what you might be able to do is get a 15-year fixed. And a 15-year fix should be a little bit lower than where you are right now. We're right about. Have you thought about that? Can you guys afford a 15-year loan?
The 30-year fix was substantially more than what we're going to be paying for the next 5 years.
$400 to $500, yeah. I think, a month.
I know it would be a jump.
So a 30-year fixed at 3.5%, which isn't so far out of the ballpark, I'm not quite sure why that would be $500 more a month for you. Of course, I'm not in front of my computer, so I can't run the numbers exactly, but you're starting how many years left do you have on this loan? 2 years before it converts?
Five
years. So you just got it?
It was a construction loan, that converted to an ARM.
Okay.
So we're 2 years into it with 5 years to go.
Okay. So it was a 7-year loan. Yes?
Correct.
Okay. Yes. I don't think it makes sense for you to refinance right now. So you're fixed for the next 5 years at 3.3%. I think interest rates are going to stay low for the next few years. I think we're going to have a tumultuous election cycle. I think we're going to have Brexit. I think it's going to make everybody in the financial markets very, very nervous. We've got a lot going on with what I think we'll see more and more economies falling into recession worldwide. I think it's going to put pressure on U.S. because U.S. is going to be considered safe. So for a while, I think you're safe. In about 2 years, you're going to want to think seriously about converting. And you're going to have to think about what's going to make sense for you in terms of how much you're actually going to do until you get there. Because if your economic side, if your income isn't going to change dramatically, you're still going to be faced with paying a little bit higher amount each month. So one thing you can do is really cut back on all the rest of your expenses and pour everything you have to paying down that loan.
Okay. Right?
Have you thought about that? Because what you want to do is when you do refinance, you want to refinance the smallest amount possible. So paying down the principal is going to be the way to do that. And that's just going to protect you. Now, are you thinking about staying in this home for the long run, or are you thinking about moving? Because that's another big thing. When is it do you need?
Long run.
Long run. I'd say at least
20.
You're 20 years. You're going to be buried in the backyard is what you're telling me here.
Right.
Pretty close.
I got to tell you, 20 years flies by. My husband and I are just celebrating 22 years in our house. We live in the North Shore, and when we bought it, we've renovated it, we've refinanced any number of times, and all of a sudden we turned and looked at each other and said, oh my goodness, we've been here 22 years. How did that happen? So it does fly by. I can promise you that.
Right.
But I want you to have a really solid interest rate. So here's the thing. In 5 years, if interest rates are still about where they are now, your loan may only float up to about 4%. And then you'd get another year there. But what you don't know is if we're going to move into an era of inflation, not hyperinflation like they were saying in 2011. And if that happens, the interest rate could jump up and you might miss your window. So in about 2 years, I want you guys to look at each other, keep your noses clean as far as your credit goes, pay down your loan as fast as possible, right, so that you can refinance exactly when you want to.
Good. Good idea.
All right.
So you think it's realistic that in 5 years, I mean, who knows what could happen even 5 days from now, but 5 years from now, you think 4% is a realistic?
She said 2 years from now.
Two years.
I can look out 2 years, but in terms of my crystal ball, it cracks after about the two-year mark. It's a little hard to tell. But here's what you should be looking for. If I, you know, my armchair economist to me, this is what I look for. Right now, if you look in Europe and you look in Asia and you look in parts of Latin America, when people put money in a bank, they're losing money on their money. Like, banks are not even a place where you can put in $500 and get $500 back. You're at a negative interest rate. So that means that people are pouring money into the United States to keep their money. So that means they're not getting much on their money, but at least they're not losing money. When you see negative interest rates start to go away abroad, right? You're going to have to read the papers and see. This is where the Wall Street Journal comes in very handy. But when you start to see those interest rates go positive, that's when interest rates will start to really rise here in the U.S.
Okay.
All right?
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. Thanks for joining me. Happy 4th of July. 1256 on WGN Radio. Our number 312-981-7200, although we're running to kind of the end of the show here. But you can still find me the rest of the week. I'll be filling in for Steve. He's out the rest of this week. He's still in Europe. Taking advantage of those negative interest rates? Probably not, but he is taking advantage of a very strong dollar, and that I can be for sure. You can also find me online at thinklink.com or at Glink on Twitter, Instagram. If you want to send me a question, you can always go to my website, thinklink.com, and send me something from there as well.